And you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 21st of April. Extraordinary librarian, woman of remarkable memory, and great lover of books, Nancy Pearl is our guest this hour. Whatever she recommends, I try to read. She is the author of Book Lust, published in 2003, that received so much national attention. Book Lust Journal, More Book Lust. Her latest book is for young people, and it is titled Book Crush. Nancy has worked as a librarian and as a bookseller in Detroit, Tulsa, and Seattle. In 1998, I love telling this story because I thought it was such a wonderful idea. She developed the program, which has now been picked up all over the country, if all Seattle, because she's from Seattle, read the same book. She's the former executive director of the Washington Center for the Book. She speaks at bookstores and libraries all over the country. She's a regular commentary about books on National Public Radio's Morning Edition and also at affiliate stations in Seattle, Tulsa, and also right here in Milwaukee. In 2004, she became the 50th winner of the Women's National Book Association Award for her extraordinary contribution to the world of books. She can recommend, and I'm just flabbergasted by her ability to do this, but if you're looking for a certain kind of book for your book club, for your child, for yourself, of a certain genre, she's got this mind that is thousands and thousands of books in it, and she will be able to recommend something for you. So take advantage of that, huh? 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050. 414-227-2050 or talk at WPR.org. Talk at WPR.org. Hello, Nancy.
Hello, Kathleen. It's so nice to be with you.
Yeah,
again.
So nice to be with you. Let's start with Mark Twain because we were looking at what happened on this day. Mark Twain passed away on this day in 1910. And I just have never talked to you, I don't think, about Mark Twain, who has been called, you know, one of the most, you know, famous and best American writers of all time. Are you a fan of Mark Twain's?
I'm a fan of Huckleberry Finn.
Huh.
And I'm a fan of Tom Sawyer. I guess I would say, yes, I am a fan. I think that I appreciate the fact that in his personal life, he had to become Mark Twain and give up being Samuel Clemens. And I think that was probably a struggle for him at the end of his life.
Hmm.
What do you think? Are you a fan?
You know, I haven't read him since high school. And when I thought about that, I thought I probably ought to read him again. I guess I never was a huge fan. I'm a fan of some of his humor, some of his quotes, which
right.
I like to read.
Right.
But the books themselves, I wouldn't put them at my top of the list of my favorite books of all time.
No, I wouldn't put them way up there either. But I think that somehow Huckleberry Finn has got caught up. I don't think we can read Huckleberry Finn. I think it's hard for us to put ourselves in the position of when they were written. So
right,
we bring
right.
to his books all of the, not only the fact that we were all assigned them in high school, which I think just kind of ruins them for many people, but I think that it's hard for us to divorce contemporary mores from reading his books.
Right. Recently on Morning Edition, you said, just when you think that everything that could ever be said about Shakespeare and his influence has been said, whoa, lo and behold, what comes along? A book that has captured your fancy.
It is. It's called The Shakespeare Riot. And I read this because I was the judge, one of the three judges in an award given by the Arts Club of Washington, D.C. to the best writing, to the book that best writes about the arts. And this was one of the finalists.
Hmm. Hmm.
So I had to read it. Otherwise, I don't think I would have read it. But it was fascinating to read because of everything I didn't know about these two famous actors, one British and one American, and the not only the acclaim that came to them, but the controversies. And it's really a book about who theater belongs to. Is it those people who were there, the everyday, ordinary person that Shakespeare wrote bottom for, you know, did
right.
bottom, or is it theater for the upper classes? And of course we get that same
yep.
sort of thing today where theater tickets in New York are, you could be $100.
Right. And where people find Shakespeare hard to read sometimes.
Exactly.
And shouldn't.
But I for the first time I saw a Shakespeare play here in Seattle, and I mean not for the first time, but I saw a Shakespeare play here in Seattle, and for the first time I got the wit.
Oh.
Which I have to say, even though I was an English major and had a wonderful Shakespeare teacher at the University of Michigan, I just never got it.
Do you think because I think Shakespeare has to be very well acted, very well acted, and then you can get it.
You're right, and it has to be spoken in such a way, not so slowly that it's sort of patronizing, but spoken in such a way that you can actually hear the kind of intricacies in it.
Mm-hmm. The book opens. Tell us a little bit about it. You say you always knew Shakespeare incited passions,
right.
But riots? Riots?
Right, right. And the book is set in, opens in, I think, 1849, and it opens with a riot. On Broadway because people objected to this British actor. And it was the kind of, oh, my gosh. And then the book goes into lots of stuff about Shakespeare's influence and this American actor who challenged William McGready for the leading Shakespearean actor of his day. But then it also goes into Shakespeare's influence in the mining camps in the western U.S., which I had also, there's a novel called Interred with His Bones, I think, or something like that, a novel that I really liked, which also deals with that kind of historical view of Shakespeare from that whole western movement.
Mm-hmm.
West. So it was a book that just opened a lot of doors, but you know, Kathleen, I believe that you can learn from a book no matter whether it's fiction or nonfiction. And I think sometimes, even though I've been reading a lot more nonfiction recently, I think, I still find that fiction offers often more truth than nonfiction does.
Right. You also talk, and I wonder if you do this with all books, that this was a great vocabulary lesson as well, because there were lots of new words, and you found yourself looking up a lot of words.
I did, and sometimes I can deal with that fairly graciously. That is, you know, I will get up and I'll bring a dictionary down to where I'm reading. And sometimes it's fine, as in this book, where clearly he was writing about a time period that I wasn't that familiar with and bringing in lots of new ideas. But sometimes I find that sort of necessity to jump up and get a dictionary and look up words more annoying than it is helpful to me.
You know, I mean to do that all the time. I'm an avid newspaper reader, and there are times when I look at the word and I think, gosh, I ought to know what this word
right.
is, and it sounds so good. And then you just go on to the next paragraph.
Right. Right, and you sort of think, oh, you can get it from its context.
Right.
And actually, when I go out and do my kind of speech about my life as a reader, that's one of the things that I point out. The problems of getting things via their context is often not
right.
doesn't the right word.
And I know. My mother, God bless her, always used to make us, from the time we were five on, every night at dinner it would be, let's learn a new word a day, which I thought was a terrific idea. And then those calendars came out, which
yes.
she could have invented.
Right.
It would have been really good.
Right. Those word-a-day calendars.
Yeah. And I have a lot of them. Not that I go through those all the time either.
The problem is using those words.
Yeah, exactly.
Speech. And I've often thought it would be really good if everybody found a word that they wanted to make more usable, and so they would use it a lot
right.
to kind of get it in common vocabulary. And the word I remember that I tried to do that with was lacuna, which is like a hole in your knowledge. Like I have a lacuna when it comes to scientific whatever.
Oh, good. We have a new word now. How do you spell it?
L-A-C-U-N-A.
Lacuna. Oh, I like it too.
And the plural is L-A-C-U-N-A-E.
Ooh. And how do you pronounce that?
I think it's Lacune.
Lacune?
I think. But probably the listeners know much more than we do. So they could tell us.
They'll tell us. You, in a recent issue of USA Today, were talking about some of the best libraries in the country, and you included Milwaukee.
I did.
I know.
I did. It was such a fun assignment. USA Today, every Friday, has something called Destinations, where they, when I saw it once, it was the best breakfast places. And they asked me to pick 10 of my favorite libraries. And when I sat down and thought of the libraries that I had been to speak or spent time in, I love the Milwaukee Public Library. I love the way it is so classic as a library, and yet it has everything you need in a 21st century library. I love the staircase. I think if I were going to get married again, wouldn't that be a fabulous place to walk down that central staircase?
With Benjamin Franklin at the bottom. You know, yeah. I think that would be. Well, why don't you just reenact your wedding, you know?
I know.
We'd have a little party for you. We could have a book club on the air. That'd be fun.
That would be great.
Yeah. Nancy Pearl is our guest. Our phone lines are jammed, so we're going to go to your calls. And here's our number, 800-486-8655. Her latest book is for young people, Book Crush. She's the author of Book Lust. She is the author of More Book Lust. She has calendars, and she has this. And this little woman sits at my desk. It's an action figure, a librarian action figure of Nancy Pearl, the likeness of Nancy, with a little cart with books on it. It's just as cute as can be. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Nancy Pearl is our guest. We go to Ron from Waupaca, our first caller. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I've got a comment and then a couple of major gripes. I read a couple hundred books a year, most about a quarter nonfiction, political philosophy, and three quarters fiction, mostly like Michael Connelly, P.D. James, Reginald Hill, Ian Rankin. And the two gripes I have, and that guy that does the great Jack Reacher novels, and the gripes I have is first, Michael Chabon, no matter how good a writer he might be, I'm tired of reading Yiddish that I can't understand. And secondly, in mystery books, a lot of romance writers have moved over to mystery. And this is not so bad. Janet Ivanovich comes to mind. But this is not so bad if it's a written book because you can scan it ahead, you know, get rid of the romance and stuff when I'm interested in mystery at 71. But at the same time, if you're in an audio book, you're stuck, you know, and this just drives me crazy. And I really get picky about what I get for audio books anymore.
Nancy.
Well, the thing about putting in that first gripe about putting foreign languages into a book, I must say, one of my favorite mysteries was written in the 1930s, I believe, by Dorothy Sayers, and it's Gaudy Night. And the last line of that book is in Latin.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's like it was so frustrating. So I understand that feeling. And it is true that many, many romance writers, well, there's been a real, and I think we're going to see a lot more, this blending of genres. So it's going to be really hard for librarians and bookstores, I think, to separate those books as cleanly as they would like them separated, you know, the romance here and the mysteries there, because, or the science fiction romance mysteries. There's going to be a lot there are a lot of writers who are just taking a bit from this genre and a bit from this genre, or literary writers who are putting into their books, they've always done this, but we're seeing a lot more of it, literary novelists like Michael Chabon or Jonathan Lethem doing that kind of bringing in aspects of genre fiction into their what are called literary novels. So, I do understand. I'm not somebody who listens to books on tape or audiobooks because I don't have that kind of life that leads to that. I mean, I don't have a long commute or I don't garden or clean house or anything, so I don't listen as other people do, but I do understand that that it's easier to skim or to just skip over passages rather than kind of having it in your ears all the time.
But don't you think Ron ought to give those romantic passages a second thought?
I think 71 is awfully young to give up on that. I agree
right.
with you.
Thanks. Thank you, Ron, very much for the call. Shelley from Madison is next. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have actually never called anyone on the radio before. I'm kind of nervous.
Don't be nervous. It's just us.
Oh, well, I just wanted to ask Nancy's opinion. I have an 8-year-old son who didn't like to read and he read this new book that I had never heard of called Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Yeah.
And now he really likes that book. And I wondered if she had any recommendations that he might like since he liked that.
Yes. First of all, there's a sequel to that.
Well, he read the sequel.
Okay. If what you think he enjoyed about that was the illustrations, do you
maybe,
think he liked
yeah.
the mixture of that or the humor? Or
probably
both. Yeah. Okay. So if you want to go to the illustrations aspect of it, the book that won the Caldecott Award is called The Invention of Hugo Cabret.
Okay.
By Brian Selznick. Now,
okay.
It's really, really thick, but don't let that put you off because probably half of it is full-page pictures.
Mm.
So it's like watching a movie in print in a book form.
Oh, okay.
And then, now, probably your son has already read, like, the Henry Huggins book.
Yeah, a few.
Okay. I think those are old, but they still are just absolutely wonderful.
Okay.
A book you might like to read to him, or, you know, if he's a good reader, The Great Brain by John D. Fitzgerald.
Oh, I love those growing up, and I forgot all about them. Okay.
Yes, yes. Oh, put those are still, you know, I find that some of the older titles are just as good today. There's often a little bit of a kind of time distortion where their allowances are like 10 cents a week or something, but if you get past that, the stories are still really wonderful.
Okay.
And then one more, let me just give to you. It's called Al Capone Does My Shirt.
Hmm.
And it's about a boy living on Alcatraz Island with his family. His father works for the prison.
Oh.
And it's very funny, and kids love it.
Huh.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank
Try
you.
Those.
All right. Thanks so much for your call.
Uh-huh.
Scott from Green Bay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Morning.
Say, years ago, I read a book of Stephen Crane's poetry. You read Badge of Courage, author?
Uh-huh.
It's very dark. It's very unique, and for some reason lately I've just had a desire to go back and read it again, but I think it's out of print and I'm having a heck of a time finding it. I wonder if you have any suggestions as to how to go about a search.
There's two websites that you might want to check out. One is Alibris, Alibris.com, and the other is abebooks.com.
Okay.
Or you could just type into a search engine, search out of print book.
Oh.
And that'll give you a whole bunch of websites.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
But check your library. Maybe they have it.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much for the call. This was a big find, and I don't know if you've had a chance to read it, but I'm interested in your comments on Kurt Vonnegut and Armageddon in retrospect, those 12 unpublished
right.
writings on War and Peace by Vonnegut, who died last year. Have you seen it?
I haven't. I have not read it. I have seen it, but I have not read it. Are you reading it now?
No, I'm not, but I want to.
Yeah. I think that will be really, really interesting. He was so influential and it's such an interesting writer.
Right. Yeah. Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Thanks, Scott, for the call. All right, here's one you'll need. You don't have to answer this one right away, but just store it in your mind. We'll get to it by the end of the hour. I'm looking for the title of a book, Marilyn writes. It's a collection of poems about the death of the poet's son. It's a recent award winner, I don't know which, and it might have the word elegy or elegies in the title. It was recently featured on the Lehrer NewsHour.
And it's about the poet's the death of the poet's son? Because there's a new book of poetry out, which is about a by a mother whose son is fighting in Iraq.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, we were trying to book that woman. Yes.
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 Yeah. I actually met that woman very, very briefly. She was at Hedgebrook, which is a women's writing retreat center, and she was one of the writers who had been invited to be there, and I had dinner and met her, and then everybody was talking about what they were working on, and she was just finishing up that collection.
Right.
So I wonder if that's it.
I'll bet it is. I'll bet it is. And if Rhonda's listening, it's on her desk right now, so she can bring it into us.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Good. All right. Thanks, Marilyn. Thanks for your...
But I'll... And I guess... I suspect the local library could find the list of guests on the news hour. And it
right.
Would, it would come... Or the list of programs.
On the news hour.
On
yeah.
the news hour. Right.
Diane from Middleton. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. It's been so good to have you back.
Thanks, Diane.
Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! And David Goodman just came out with their third book, and I can't think of the exact title, but it's Everyday. It's something about everyday heroes, and it has a chapter devoted to the courage of librarians in protecting their clients' privacy against the Patriot Act. And I just wanted to bring that up.
It's librarians did take and continue to take a very strong stance against the using the Patriot Act to reveal what library patrons are checking out or reading, and it's something I think that the profession as a whole is very proud of themselves, as they should be, for doing that.
And that's all. It's just that she has a chapter, and they have a chapter in the book about that, and it's well-deserved credit from a very smart writing team, and thank you.
Thank you for the call. And Rhonda has just brought in the book. Nancy, it's The Warrior, A Mother's Story of a Son at War.
Yes.
Frances Ritchie, she is from West Virginia, and she has written another book of poetry. Her son is a graduate, is a graduate of the United States Military Academy, and went on the first of two deployments to Iraq. She began to write, and it's her, I can't imagine sending a son to war.
I know.
Her intensely personal exploration of what a mother is feeling as her only son goes off to war, as she says goodbye to him, misses him, prays for him, and waits for him to come home.
Yeah.
So that's that book. And we're...
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, please.
Oh, I was just going to say, so you're going to have her?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we don't have her booked yet, but we will have her.
That's great. Well, there's a book called by Elizabeth Sammet, who is a civilian professor of literature at West Point. And it's called it's called Soldier's Heart. And it is just, it's wonderful on a number of levels. One is that it kind of does what reading Lolita in Tehran did, that is, talk about great literature in terms of its sort of contemporary human meaning. But what I liked about this book is the amount I learned about West Point as an institution. And Soldier's Heart is what they used to call during the Civil War the kind of post-traumatic stress disorder, and how West Point really was riven by the Civil War, for example, because all of those generals in the Civil War were in the same class or the same couple of classes and had spent 4 years together there and then went off on opposite ends of this great war. So it's a really good book. I highly recommend it.
Okay, good. Thank you very much, Diane, for your call. Let's go next to Pat from Green Bay. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Hi,
oh, Kathleen, it's so nice to have you. Hello. It's so strange you're talking about West Point, but I called to recommend a mystery book to Ron, and it takes place in the West Point Academy in 1830.
Hmm.
And a young cadet's body is found hanging from a rope, and his heart is ripped out.
Oh, my.
And to help solve the mystery, he calls upon one of the young cadets who is Edgar Allan Poe. The name of the book is A Pale Blue Eye by Lewis Bayard. Are
yes.
you familiar? Are you
yeah,
familiar
oh, that
at all
is a, that, that is a good mystery selection, you know, a good mystery recommendation, A Pale Blue Eye.
Hmm. Yeah, that's wonderful. I'm enjoying it a lot. Are you familiar with his book, Mr. Timothy?
I did not read. I tried Mr. Timothy and couldn't get into it.
Okay.
As I recall, it was not a mystery.
Okay. This is the first I've read of this author, and so far I'm really enjoying it.
So
there's one for Ron.
Uh-huh. And you like historical mysteries like that?
I like any kind of book. I joined a book club at Barnes & Noble, and we were the mystery book club. But now we're eclectic. We read everything.
So does Nancy.
Yes.
You read everything, Nancy. Don't
I
you?
Do.
You read everything.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, there's an author named Carrie Brown who once described herself as a promiscuous reader. And I have borrowed that phrase for myself. I think it's descriptive of my reading habits mm-hmm. as well.
Thanks, Pat, very much for the call. Email from Sarah. My 8-year-old daughter is an avid reader, reading at an early fifth grade level, and is absolutely obsessed with knights. She's also an excellent artist who enjoys looking at intricate pictures of knights and learning about the lives of knights. Do you have a good nonfiction or fiction recommendation for her?
I think the one nonfiction, which she might already have seen, but if not, David McCauley did a whole series of books about sort of architecturally looking at different types of buildings. And he did one of his best is called Castle.
Okay.
So that might be a good thing for that little girl to read. There are many, many good nonfiction books about knights in the late Middle Ages. I'm trying to think of. There's one that I talk about in Book Crush, but I think the best thing to do is to go to the library and look in. I would say probably the 900s, the children's 900s, or ask the librarian because there's so many. I mean, that's the big change from when you and I were young, Kathleen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a song, when you and I were young, Kathleen, or something. When we were young, the nonfiction was not great.
Yeah.
But now it's like probably one of the best parts of being a child is just all the great nonfiction that's out there.
Right. Isn't it interesting what captures our fancy, though? This 8-year-old is fascinated by knights.
Yes. And what I keep thinking is that when she gets a little bit older, there are so many, I mean, Mallory's L'Amour d'Arthur and all the wonderful, wonderful King Arthur books that are out there.
Yes. Thanks so much for the call or for the email. Let's go to Alan from Fish Creek. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy, I wanted to ask you about the origins of this community read that you started.
Uh-huh.
Because we just participated in the NEA's Big Read.
Oh, the Big Read, yes.
Which I'm sure was inspired by what you did.
Yes. Ours started as a result of a grant. The one at Seattle Public Library started as a result of a grant that we had gotten to build audiences for literature. And I was very interested in the kind of belief that I've always had that book discussions, community book discussions, especially that meet in a public place like a library or a community center, are very, very powerful tools for building community. And so when the NEA came up, adapted that idea to the Big Read, and then gives, it's a great program because of the amount of support that they give libraries and their partnering organizations to do these community reading projects. I think it's just fantastic. Their supporting materials, their PSAs, and the help that they give, I think really makes it within the abilities of any community, large or small, to do it.
Yeah,
what
we did,
book did you?
What
the book did you
Wrath
choose?
By John Steinbeck.
Uh-huh. What did you do? Grapes of Wrath.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And but you're right. The materials they provided were tremendous: reader's guides and audio guides and teacher's guides. We just had a terrific success with ours. And it's ironic that you started the program talking about Mark Twain, because we've sent in a proposal to do The Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So get a lot of kids involved.
And you know, one of the things that, as a result of, or one of the books that I felt went really well with the John Steinbeck book is the new book by Tim Egan, not so new now. I think it won the National Book Award last year, about the folks who didn't go west, leave Oklahoma and the Dust Bowl, but stayed.
Oh.
Have you read that?
I have not.
Oh, it's a wonderful...
We did use a book by Karen Hess.
Yes, Out of the Dust.
Yeah.
Right. But the Tim Egan one is just, you know, he interviews people who survived the Dirty 30s, and it's, I'm trying to look for the name of the book. Oh, The Worst Hard Time, The Untold Story of Those Who Survived the Great American Dust Bowl.
That's right. Somebody who came to one of the events told me about that. I will have to check into that.
Yes, definitely. You won't regret it.
Great.
I promise.
Well, thank you for inspiring such a great program that's going all over the country now.
Oh, good. I'm glad you had a good experience with it.
Thanks, Ellen.
Great way to explore a book.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. What made you think of that idea? I think it's a marvelous idea, too, Nancy.
Well, it sort of brought together a lot of things that I felt that I wanted, that I was interested in and wanted to do, and one of them was really have the book club experience more in public settings. I mean, there are a lot of groups of kind of wonderful book groups that have gotten together because they all have children the same age, or their kids all do this, or they all work together. But I loved the idea of having strangers come together to talk about important issues through the vehicle of a book. I think it makes it a lot easier and in some ways and safer to do that. And then I also wanted, when we started it, we did not pick classics. We picked books that I felt needed more people needed to read because they would lead to such good discussions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and different communities, even before the Big Read, the NEA project started, different communities. The best thing about the project, I think, is that it's infinitely adaptable, and any community can take that core idea and just use it any way that they feel fits their community's needs.
Right. Let's go next to Bill from Sun Prairie. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, ladies. I have a comment and a question. First, the comment. I am delighted to hear that other people have this magnificent obsession about reading books. I've been such an addict all my life. I'm 65, and I've read mostly nonfiction.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I feel like I need a 12-step program when I go in a bookstore. It's hard for me not to buy one. Many years ago, I became interested in Eastern thought, and I read dozens of books, and I found a need for ones that would articulate the principles and practices of the East in a way that the Westerners could use it.
Mm-hmm.
So I started writing a trilogy, and I'm like 90% finished. One of the books are published, and I've got another two coming out. I wanted to keep the rights to what I'm writing, so I've done print-on-demand self-publishing. And so I need to promote the books myself, and this is sort of a lacuna in the whole process.
Right.
So I'd love to hear your advice on when I get through with this trilogy, how I might present these principles and practices, which I feel are very valuable.
The hardest thing about doing the print-on-demand is not even the money that it takes, but it's what to do once the books are done and how to get the word of those books out there. And I'm a librarian, and so I'm going to say that what you should do is talk to libraries and see if you can do public programs talking about those books and those ideas.
That's a good idea.
That's the best way that I know of to do that. Always being aware of the fact that it's so you can never predict how many people will come. I mean, it's, public programming is like, for librarians, this huge headache, because it would be really nice to be able to say, oh, we guarantee an audience of 25 people. But you never, ever, ever know. But that's a good way of doing it.
Would a public facility allow a person to come in that's selling books?
Many it varies from library to library. Many libraries do allow that, yes. You know,
great.
To do a program and then,
your advice,
and then sell the book.
Yeah, I just feel like I'm winking at a girl in the dark. I know what I'm doing, but nobody else does.
Thank you, Bill.
Great program. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call and using the word for the day, too.
Yeah.
That's, I like that. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. Nancy Pearl is our guest this hour. We'd love to have her on. She's a terrific librarian. She has written several books. Book Lust, published a few years ago, and that just got her on a roll here. Book Lust Journal, more Book Lust. She has calendars. Her latest book is for young people, Book Crush. She's worked as a librarian and a bookseller in Detroit, Tulsa, Seattle. She developed the program, picked up all over the world, really, if all Seattle read the same book, and she is the former executive director of the Washington Center for the Book. You can send an email. You can wait until one line is free and get through on the phone. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. And we have exciting news here. Ira Flatow, who's the host of Talk of the Nation Science Friday, is coming to Milwaukee on May 16 for a live national broadcast of his program Science Friday, which of course you hear every week on Wisconsin Public Radio. You're invited to join us at the Milwaukee Public Museum on May 16 from 1 until 3 o'clock for the show, and then stay for a reception to meet Ira Flatow and members of the Science Friday team. The tickets are $20 each, and it includes admission to the museum, the radio broadcast, and also the reception, and there will be a VIP dinner with Ira Flatow and WPR hosts. I'll be there at Mater's Restaurant at 5:30. Tickets are $50. Information is at our website, wpr.org/Ira, or for tickets, call 414-227-2047. That's 414-227-2047. More with Nancy and your calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls for Nancy and Marianne from Marshfield. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. Well, welcome back, Kathleen.
Thanks, Marianne.
And hello, Nancy.
Hello.
I'm wondering if there's a book for, like, new parents, especially for the audience would be their babies, toddlers, that it would be written in a way that would help the new parent learn to coochie-coo their children. you know, some parents are kind of stiff in the beginning.
You know, there are probably many of those books. I don't know that I could come up with a title offhand. You know, there's a sequel. You know, one of the classic books is What to Expect When You're Expecting, mm-hmm. and I think that there's a sequel to that for new parents. Again, I would call your local library or stop in and ask the librarian,
mm-hmm.
and they could find stuff for you.
Yeah, I think there is a sequel to that. I think I just saw it in a bookstore over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks so much for your call.
I always hate it when I can't give a perfect answer.
It's all right. It's go to the library.
To go to the library.
That's
right.
that's a very appropriate answer.
I know, but I'm afraid the listeners just get tired of that hearing that.
Well, that's all right. They should go to the library. Sarah writes, I've just read Those Who Save Us by Jenna Bloom about a mother in Germany going through World War II, and years later her daughter trying to figure out what her mother really went through. I loved it and read the thick book in a few days. It was beautifully written and engaging. Familiar with that one, Nancy?
I've heard of that. I have not read it.
Yeah.
But I think a follow-up good book to that would be The Zookeeper's Wife by Diane Ackerman.
I've heard this.
The story, it's a World War II story of the Warsaw zookeepers and their attempts both to help people escape from the Warsaw ghetto and to hide in the zoo. It's a book for animal lovers, for people who love good writing. Diane Ackerman is a poet, and it's just a fascinating biography.
Mm. And what was the animal book that you reviewed recently, too, one of the Under the Radars? Dialogues?
Yes, Animal Dialogues by Craig Childs. I loved that book. It was originally published several years ago by Sasquatch, who publishes Book Lust and those books. And it was called at that time Crossing Paths, Encounters with Animals in the Wild.
Hmm.
And then when it went out of print, Little Brown, I think, asked him to expand on it. So Animal Dialogues is just absolutely, for any animal lover and any outdoors person, I think Craig Child's book cannot be beat. Hmm. But it needs to come with a sticker that says, warning, do not try this at home, because he is fearless.
Oh.
And there's a very, very heart-pounding section in there when he meets up with a cougar,
which
just thinking about it makes my heart pound a little bit.
Thanks, Marianne. Let's go to Tim from Wausau next. And we have one line open if you've been trying to get through, 800-486-8655. Hi, Tim from Wausau.
Hi, Kathleen and Nancy.
Hello.
For the young girl who wrote in the email about having an interest in knights, there's a wonderful show at the Woodson Art Museum here in Wausau of armor.
Hmm.
Just wanted to let her know.
Hmm.
I didn't get where she lived, but if it's convenient, it would be a great show. I think she'd really enjoy it.
Yeah.
That's great.
No place is too far away in Wisconsin, so it's worth a trip.
There you go.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Julie is next from Hortonville. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I had a question, Nancy, about what you think about the trend in the publishing industry of the publishing companies buying each other out, becoming big conglomerates, and, just a lot of them don't even accept manuscripts anymore from writers. You have to get an agent to get your manuscript to them. And what do you think the impact is going to be on the, just the books that we're going to see? You know, are we only going to see bestsellers, or are we still going to see some good books?
I think that's a really, really good question, and it raises some really serious issues. I think that this kind of conglomerate that we're seeing, Bertelsmann is the Random House parent company, Holtzbrink is the big company that includes Farrar Straus and St. Martin's and all of that. That kind of gathering together, I think that for publishing, it has always been a question, of course, of the bottom line. It's a business. And that's always in some ways dictated what books they're going to accept and what books they're not going to accept. My fear, which I think probably you share, is that we're not going to see those what are called mid-list books, those books that first novels, for example. What we're getting so much of is the big political autobiography memoirs or the clear best-selling writers, the Tom Clancy's and the Danielle Steele, because they know that those are probably going to make money. And that does worry me. It makes it much more important that we support those small publishers, Milkweed, for example, Grey Wolf Press, those small publishers that are bringing out really good McAdam Cage, I'm thinking of other ones, Unbridled books, that are taking a chance on new writers and helping to nurture them.
Hmm.
So those publishers are still out there. Those little publishers are still out there. But it is true that many of the major publishers are, even though they have separate imprints, are probably are perhaps more driven by the bottom line than ever before.
Do you think those small publishers will survive?
I think they're determined to survive. I think they need us to do that. And I think it's hard. In what I find is that those there are still really good books out there, but it's harder and harder to find them because there's so many bad books out there.
Thank you, Julie. Thanks for the call. Boyd is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Boyd.
Good morning, Kathleen, and hello again, Nancy.
Hello.
I know time is short, so I'll get to the point. For years, in the realm of science fiction, I've read quite a bit of books in the alternate history format. And I think it's a really fascinating format, and it makes me continue to want to read more about normal or regular history. Nancy, have you read any books from that format? And if you have, what could you suggest?
Well, one of my favorite authors is a man called Guy Gavriel Kay. Have you read him?
The name doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, he writes historical fantasies that are set in kind of parallel, very familiar universes, but with a slight difference.
Okay.
And my favorite, which is actually a book my husband liked as much as I did, is The Lions of Al-Rassan,
A-L-R-A-S-S-A-N.
Okay, and another one he did is The Sailing to Sarantium, S-A-R-A-N-T-I-U-M, or Sarantium, I guess, which is Byzantium.
Okay, Byzantium. I remember there was a book I read a few years ago called Agent of Byzantium, which took place in an alternate timeline. It was a bunch of short stories, and that was very good, but Guy Gabriel Kay.
Especially The Lions of Al-Rassan, which is one of my very favorite books of all time.
Okay.
Nancy, how many of those kinds of books do you have?
I know, say that a lot.
You must have hundreds, huh? Thanks, Boyd. Thanks for the call. Bye. We go next to Tom from Fond du Lac. Hi, Tom.
Well, hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First, I wanted to say that my favorite personal historical fiction writer is Stephen Lawhead. I love the guy.
Uh-huh.
Just speaking of Byzantium made me think of that because he has the book Byzantium. But I wanted to know, can you recommend any books along like the Alan Quatermain, Indiana Jones type of genre?
Oh.
I'm kind of limited. I can't really think of anything, or I've looked for stuff, but it's such a vague genre to look for.
If you email me, I can send you a list. We just did a list of bookmark that's going to be called "So You Want to Be Indiana Jones."
Oh, did you
like
really?
So my email, and it's in all my books. It's just Nancy@nancypearl.com. If you email me that, I will send you that list.
Oh, thank you very much.
Oh,
you're
nice,
welcome.
Nancy.
That's great. I just love it when things like that happen.
I do too. Thanks so much. Karen from Rolling Stone. Hi, Minnesota.
Hi. I have a suggestion for a book. It was just an amazing read for me. Geraldine Brooks is a journalist, and she wrote a novel called Year of Wonders. It was her first novel in 2001. It's a story based on a true incident in a little village in England during the year of the plague, the Black Plague in 1066. And it is really the story of how people are changed by a catastrophe. Some people become kinder and better, and some people become much, much worse. She compares this to what happened in our country after 9/11. It's an amazing book. I could not put it down. My husband, I said, I think you're going to enjoy this book. He generally does his projects during the day. We're retired, and he's outside and in the garden and so forth. I saw him sneak in this book during the day, too. Neither one of us could stop reading it. Mm. It's an amazing read. And she just won the Pulitzer Prize for March, which is about a little women family and the father and what happens to him. When he's off at the war, so I'm starting that one now.
Mm.
Thank you so much for this program, and Kathleen, it is wonderful to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thanks very much for the call. Thanks. So, Nancy, send us to that email address again. I know that you've got places where you do under the radar books, and send us somewhere.
Oh, And do you want, like, my email? Or?
Yeah, no, where you go to find out where your reviews are, where your recommendations are.
If people want to go into KUOW.org.
KUOW.org.
And then click on, I haven't looked at the website for a while, but Sound Focus.
Okay.
And then they can get weekly, for free, weekly book reviews from me.
Okay. Okay.
And then at the Milwaukee Public Library webpage, there's Pearl's Picks.
Oh, darn, isn't that great?
So, and they're one of the subscribers to Pearl's Picks. So on there is 12 recommended titles with annotations a month.
All right. Thanks, Nancy. It's always great to have you with us.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Kathleen.
Nancy Pearl, our guest, and Nancy is just this wonderful librarian. Her books are Book Lust, a few years ago, More Book Lust. Her latest book is for young people, and it is titled Book Crush. You can get her action figure complete with books and calendars as well. Thanks to Rhonda Fanding, who is also a librarian, our producer, Rhonda. And thanks to John Tretter. She produced the show, Rhonda Fanning, that is. And thanks to John Tretter for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios and for all of your wonderful calls. Thanks. We'll be with you again tomorrow. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.